Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Yo, welcome into the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence. Thanks so much for hanging out, being a part of today's episode. I'm really excited about today's guest. And before I get to the interview, which is terrific, I want to thank Mark Grody, because this all happened because Grody and I were having a conversation on the air, and I don't even remember how Swika came up, but we were like, yeah, she's pretty great. And they're like, yeah, we should talk to her. And then I was like, I should have her on House of L, because her story's pretty amazing. Northwestern grad, walked out of Evanston right into a job at the Score. Very much a pioneering figure in sports reporting in Chicago in the 90s and early 2000s. And then she walks away and completely goes in a different direction. I'll leave it up to you listening to the interview to hear the direction that she went in. But I can tell you, it's delicious. And it was fun to just catch up. You know, we talk occasionally on Facebook, but I'm one of the people that used to produce Julie's show. When I was first starting out as a producer, Julie would have a weekend show. She'd have, I think she took over the Sunday morning show when Dan got promoted to full-time. She would do evenings, and I would produce her show sometimes in the evenings when I was a part-time producer. She's great at the update desk, a fantastic reporter who helped me a ton when I started reporting. Just kind of learning the ropes, introducing me to people, that sort of thing. Which is what you should do. Like, that you should try to help people along if you can. But she didn't have to. And she did. And it was great. We also, the two of us, bond over White Sox stuff. She's one of the most passionate White Sox fans that there is. And you'll hear it. Like, we talk about it in here, and you'll hear her, like, passion for the team and how that's never really gone away, which is great. It's wonderful to see. I tell you, I struggle with, I mean, the Bears thing for me is completely gone. Like, growing up as a kid, the Bears were my favorite thing. And I think that when you try to report on, when you're ensconced on a beat, especially one as tough and competitive as that beat was when I was reporting. I mean, you had, you know, Biggsy's been there for 20 years now, and John Moon Mullen and Jeff Dickerson, you know, Jeff Dickerson and I, like, we good friends, but we would also, you know, we competed. Let's put it that way. Zach's on the beat. Like, there are a lot of really good reporters on the beat back then. And so you end up having to look at things clinically. And I've lost all of that stuff. Like, knowing how the sausage is made, covering the Bears, like, I've completely lost all of it. I can still get emotional about the White Sox. I still can get emotional about the Bulls, because even though I've covered locker rooms, I wasn't covering the team. It's different. But I'm happy that Julie still has this type of joy. And being away from it, I mean, it's a whole, when I tell you that the path that she's on now is completely different than the path that she was on, you will understand when you listen. But I love that she'll every now and again, like, send me a note, like, hey, this was a really good topic that you did, or I didn't think about it that way. And it's helpful, because I know that she knows what she's talking about. And sometimes, like, you're looking for affirmation. Sometimes you're looking for constructive criticism from people who know. But I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk, because she's just pleasant. On top of everything else, she's pleasant to talk to, like, a lot of fun. So there's a lot of laughs in here. We have a good time. There's a lot of bonding. You'll hear it in here. And I think that if she wants to marry what she did before to what she's doing now, I think there are avenues to do it. And you'll hear inside here that my mind is already starting to spin on how I might be able to facilitate some of this stuff. So enjoy. Julie Swieke is fantastic. She was so great. And I think that you are going to love this interview with her. This is me and Julie Swieke talking about all sorts of stuff on the House of L podcast. I know that you're probably exhausted, so I'm going to try not to take all of your time in talking to you. But
are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Talk as long as you want. I will talk about, like, colors of the rainbow, whatever you want. I am here, and I am so excited to talk to you. So my time is your time.
All right. Well, thank you. I was thinking, one of the reasons, like, you came up in conversation on the air, and we were talking. I forget what we were talking about, but you came up in conversation on the air, and I was like, man, I need to have Jules on the podcast. And I was thinking about you even before that, because you're one of the first people that I encountered in sports radio that was ahead of the game when it came to fantasy. You were talking about your rotisserie team, your roto team, like, all the time. And this was in the 90s. You know, you were talking about this. And I wonder what you think about the explosion of then fantasy sports and now where we are with gambling.
Oh my gosh, that's a great link. What's really funny is I always loved the rotisserie baseball. I love drafting the teams. It's hard because you have to look and see, you know, starting pitchers every day and all that. But where I really got my butt kicked was with fantasy football years ago. There was a week where, like, the Bears division had a bye, or the Bears had a bye and the rest of their division didn't, or vice versa. Whatever it was, I didn't make the right adjustments based on the bye week, and I got clobbered. And after that, I'm like, I need to take time off from this fantasy football stuff. But I'm actually back into it now and so addicted to it. It's unbelievable how I spend my Sundays, like, looking to see who I'm getting points from and how the rest of the league is doing. And I have totally become, like, a follower of anybody who's on the score or on Twitter or anybody who can offer me suggestions on a sleeper, even though everyone else is hearing the same suggestions. But I wish I were better at the gambling side of it, because that is such a big part of sports nowadays, because that's why sports are so popular, because people are, you know, watching to see, you know, if their prop bet's coming through or if this team's covering or, you know, blah, blah, blah. I wish I were better at that side of it. And working at the Score for so many years, I learned a lot about gambling, not necessarily from my personal experiences, but from everybody else's. But I really felt so green. I felt like I didn't understand, like, you know, what does plus 140 mean? And what does this mean? And, you know, I had to learn stuff like that. And it is such a big deal now. I was even thinking, I had caught you earlier today. You had made a comment. I think it was you had made a comment about the prop bet for tonight.
Yes.
On receivers against the Bears. And I thought that yesterday when I heard the whole secondary was out. I thought, if I were a gambling girl, I would look for a prop bet on this, because Jefferson's going to go to town.
I was worried when you left the Score that you would leave sports behind. And it kind of made me, well, right. Like, it made me sad, because I know how much, like, you love sports. So I'm glad that it didn't have that effect on you.
Well, what's really sad is it was my dream to cover a White Sox World Series. And if I had just hung with it a little bit longer, I could have gotten to see that happen. And Chris Ronji did such a great job as a Sox pre and post game host. I just kept thinking, like, oh, I wish I had stuck it around and maybe I could have gotten that gig. I would have loved to have done it. So, you know, that first Christmas after the White Sox won the World Series, people were giving me World Series DVDs and I couldn't watch them. I had a really hard time with it, because I felt like, you know, I put in all the grunt work covering bad teams, and then when there was a good team, I missed it. So, you know, that took a little while to reconcile. But, you know, whenever people say, like, oh, you left sports, you don't like sports anymore, I'm like, no, I will always love sports. I will always be, you know, watching baseball games. I'm one of those people, you know, when people say, like, baseball's so boring, I can watch, like, the two worst teams in baseball in a meaningless spring training game, because it's baseball, because I can sit there and watch baseball, like, of any sort. And I know you being a baseball guy at heart and going back to your catcher's days and everything, I know it's in your blood. You see baseball and, like, something clicks for you. You know, there are sports I don't watch as much as I used to, and that makes me a little sad, just because I don't follow certain things as much as I wish I did. But to me, the NFL was my first love. I watched it with my dad when I was a kid. I will still watch the Bears even when they're bad. You know, like I said, I love baseball. I don't think I could ever get sports out of my blood.
What's the one thing that you wish someone would have told you when you were pioneering the sports radio business?
Oh my gosh. There's so much I wish people had told me. And I think one of the hardest things is being so young. The Score was my first full-time job after I graduated Northwestern, and I was green. I mean, I hadn't been in locker rooms before. I mean, when you cover college sports, they bring the players out to you. And all of a sudden, I'm 22 years old, and I've got to go into a hockey locker room or a baseball locker room and talk to people I don't know. And, you know, it was very sobering. It really woke me up quickly to, boy, there's no learning curve. There's no chance to ease into this. You just got to jump off the deep end of the pool. But I think if I knew then what I know now, being thicker skinned would be a big part of it. Like, just with age and maturity and wisdom, you learn not to take things so personally, not to react so emotionally. And I wish 20-something Julie knew that back then, that, you know, you got to kind of shrug things off sometimes. You got to not let it get to you. I still take things personally. I mean, somebody doesn't like a dessert I made, and that's my heart on a plate. I want to cry. You know, nothing about me will ever change in that. I even had a chef in cooking school who said, boy, you wear your heart on your sleeve. I said, yeah, I'm not going to apologize for it. That's who I am. But I think I've become so much more feisty, if that even makes sense. I mean, you'd think being a female and one of the few females in sports radio back then that I would have, you know, been tough as nails to begin with. But I feel like now I'm just more take no BS kind of gal, and I wish I had more of that in me back then.
What was your favorite moment inside a clubhouse, inside a locker room, on the field, pre or post game?
Oh my gosh. See, now that's a tough one to narrow down, because I loved reporting. I really did. I loved being out in the field. I loved that time before the game where you could just sit in the dugout. I still remember one day I was sitting in the dugout at Wrigley before a game, and John Lieber and Kevin Tappany were sitting there with me, and they're just showing me grips and talking pitching and just like shooting the breeze. It wasn't anything I was going to run to air with or anything like that. It was just so cool to be sitting there soaking that up and learning that type of stuff. I loved talking to the baseball scouts in the press box before a game. I loved just being in that atmosphere and absorbing. I loved going to Platteville and learning from John Moon Mullen things about like offensive line techniques and stuff like that. I'd be sitting there watching and taking notes, and I just wanted to soak it all up like a sponge. I loved that experience. I loved, being around people and getting to know them. I still remember Mike Devereaux when he played for the White Sox, Devo. I would sit next to him at his locker and like help him open his fan mail. Like I didn't care. I just, I enjoyed talking to people, and, I wasn't looking for a story at the time or anything. I was just, hey, this is cool. I'm seeing who's writing new letters, and this is kind of neat. So those moments, I never took those for granted. I really appreciated them. I loved talking to the managers in the dugout before the game. Even when I was still doing some freelance stuff and I was back at the ballpark, I remember Dusty Baker asking me how the cooking business was going and looking at the scars from the ovens on my arms, like stuff like that. I just enjoyed that real time. And, there were the days you're at the United Center and you're watching Michael Jordan and pinching yourself thinking, I am watching the greatest player in the game and getting paid to do it. Like stuff like that never got old, but it was those genuine moments of just getting to know people and relate to people. If I had to pick out one, I wouldn't be able to pick it, narrow it down to 1,000, but like little things come to my head. Do you remember the 2000 White Sox?
Yes.
That made the playoffs, and they had like Frank Thomas and James Baldwin and Bill Seamus. Like they were just a fun bunch of players. And I remember being in a post game and Jerry Manuel walks in, and Jerry was a trip. And Jerry walks in and he's muttering. And I'm like, what is he muttering? Jerry Manuel is muttering, who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? And his Jerry Manuel What? Nobody had any idea what he's talking about. I'm like, is he losing it? Is he going crazy? And we walk into the locker room and Baja Men, whatever their group was, the song, Who Let the Dogs Out, is blaring in the locker room. And this is before it like became mainstream radio song. And that's what Jerry Manuel was repeating. He's mumbling, who let the dogs out, in his post-game press conference, because they'd all been playing it in the locker room.
That is outstanding.
There was one day for a pregame batting practice with that team when all the players are taking the field. Frank Thomas came out in a big James Baldwin afro. And it was hilarious because James Baldwin had the crazy curly afro hair, and Frank Thomas came out wearing a wig to look like James Baldwin. And I mean, little stuff like that, where there was never really anywhere to report that. I wasn't going to do a Sox hit and say, oh, guess what happened at batting practice today? But I would just file it away like, boy, that shows you this team is close or something like that. Those little things that illustrated, kind of the inside to the game and not just what you see on the field.
I think I kind of know, maybe not. Okay, I'll just ask the question. Who were some of your favorite players to talk to and why?
Oh, gosh, that's so good. Your questions are great, Lawrence. You should do this for a living.
I know, right?
I think a lot of the baseball players were my favorites because I spent more time around them, because you could get to know them better. But I always appreciated the guys who just would shoot the breeze, who were funny. It's not like I was going to get to know Michael Jordan. I didn't have access to Michael Jordan to sit and ask him like, hey, what'd you have for lunch today or something like that. But when you had all this time around baseball guys in the dugout, in the locker room, you could get to know him better. You could get to know Maglio Ordóñez's kids or I mean, gosh, there were so many guys on both sides of town that were just legit funny. And I appreciated that as much as anything. And then a lot of the role player guys, the bullpen guys, the specialty guys, the bench players, those were the guys that I really appreciated because they had all the time in the world to talk to you. You know, you might not get an interview with Sammy Sosa, but you could sit and talk to, you know, a utility infielder who probably had some pretty good stories. You know, guys like Mickey Morandini were hilarious. I loved Tony Graffinino when he was with the Sox. Just so many good guys that had good hearts and were fun to be around. Bill Wennington, Steve Kerr, guys when I covered the Bulls who always had time for you. You know, those were the guys I got to know really well, and I appreciated that a lot. I can't even tell you how many, like I said, those little funny moments where people might not, you know, might not see that side of somebody, even the visiting players. There were so many visiting baseball players that I talked to every time they came through town that were just like genuinely some of the greatest guys I met in sports. Mike Sweeney with the Kansas City Royals, Sean Casey with the Reds. These guys were just like good guys. I remember Mike Sweeney being very spiritual, like
he
very,
definitely,
you know,
was
God grounded.
Yes.
And we would talk about our faith and our spirituality and about Christian music that we liked. And one day he came into town with the Royals and he came up to me and he said, "How's your heart?" And I thought he was asking me like if I had a heart condition. I'm like, "Dude, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm good. Thanks for asking." And then I realized he meant like spiritually, "How's your heart?" And I thought, that's just so cool. Like that, you know, this big star baseball player is asking me how I'm doing spiritually. And like, you know, he or Sean Casey or Tony Graffinino, guys that I shared similar faith stories with, we would trade CDs. Like Tony Graffinino and I would, you know, trade Creed CDs or something like that. And just, you know, to get to know those guys as people and not just baseball players, I honestly, that was my favorite part of being a reporter, was that getting to know people. And I think that's part of what made me good at my job.
I thought for sure, I'm glad I didn't lead you into it, because I thought for sure the name that you were going to pull was Paul Konerko.
I love Paulie. I can't say enough good things about him, but if I had to pick a favorite Sox player of all time, it was Burley. I mean, he is still my favorite of all time. And the funny thing was, Burley's family was always around the team, and they were so down to earth. I mean, just like Burley is. And so mom and dad would be there. Grandma would be there. I'd always be looking in the stands for Grandma Burley because she'd be sitting in the family section with her little headphones on listening to the radio broadcast. But I mean, the whole family would come to games. And Burley's dad one day had his shoulder separated. And I, you know, I'm asking him like, "Oh, what happened?" And he's totally deferring like, "Oh yeah, I don't really want to talk about it," trying to be all tough guy. And Burley tells me his dad fell off his tractor.
Well, and, yeah, because obviously.
All right. It's just a Burley family kind of story. But I mean, Burley was just so down to earth. And I got to know him when he first came up and he was pitching out of the bullpen. And just thinking like, yeah, this guy's got something. This guy's a lefty who's crafty and he's going to be really good. And I think it was just the likability factor of him being so just young and unassuming, unaffected. And what was really funny is he was good friends with John Garland and they seemed so unlikely together because Garland was Mr. like laid back California, cool surfer dude. And then you had Burley who's Mr. like Midwest. I have a farm and I go hunting, but you'd see him hanging out together and this weird couple just clicked. They were just like, you know, the odd couple in the locker room. There were so many good guys in baseball to cover. Like I said, a lot of pitchers that I just absorbed stuff from. I loved hearing about like techniques for how they rehab. I still remember Jim Bullinger, you know, talking about how he was rehabbing an arm injury. Or like I said, the guys like Tappany and Lieber who would sit there and show me pitch grip. I still remember one of the scouts in the media, in the press box, telling me about pitches John Garland threw. And this is a baseball scout who was very well respected, worked for the Cubs, worked for the Twins, very well respected scout. And he's telling me, "Yeah, you know, Garland's got this knuckle curve he's throwing right now. And it, you know, he's throwing it really well." So I asked Garland about it. And he's like, "I don't throw that. I don't throw a knuckle curve." And I'm like, "Yeah, you do. No, I don't. I just thought, it's okay. Nothing is going to happen by telling Julie Swieka of the score you throw a knuckle curve. You know, like, here's this baseball scout who's telling me what you throw and you won't admit it. And I've seen John Garland a couple of times since at various charity softball games and things like that. And I always want to ask him about it, but, you know, I don't want to dredge that up. It was, you know, and I felt really stupid that day. I was like, oh, I can't believe he's, you know, calling me out in front of everyone that I don't know what he throws. But I did know what he threw, and he just, you know, got to be all secretive and everything.
He's out there being weird.
Exactly. Pitchers, all weird. And I have to tell you, just I'm sure this does not paint me in a good light at all, but because it's a funny story, I'm going to share it. My stepson played baseball for a long time, and he was playing one day in a tournament where word traveled that Kerry Wood was coaching his son's team in the same tournament. They were in a different age bracket, but, you know, that Kerry Wood was there coaching. And so I told my husband, I'm going to go say hi to Kerry Wood. Is he going to remember me? I'm like, yeah, he'll remember me. So I go over and, you know, I'm sitting in the stands waiting for Kerry's son's game to end. And when it ends, I wave and he starts walking over and, you know, I say hi to him and we're catching up and I'm telling him like, hey, you know, my stepson's team just finished playing. Can I introduce you to him? And he's like, sure. So he starts walking with me to go meet my stepson and my stepson's teammates, which is going to be such a huge thrill to them. And I tripped over a sprinkler head.
Oh,
and I
wiped
out hard. I hit the ground hard. And here I am, like, trying to look all smooth and cool. Like, hey, I know Kerry Wood. I'm going to bring him over to meet the baseball team. And then I just face planted. Who put that sprinkler head there?
Stupid sprinkler head.
Why does the grass need to be watered?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I shrugged it off. I'm like, whatever, you know, Kerry Wood's not going to remember 20 years from now that I tripped over a sprinkler head. I will, but he won't. And it just made those kids' day that Kerry Wood came over and signed baseballs for them and took pictures with them and, you know, just took an interest in, like, hey, how'd you guys do today? How was your game? Stuff like that. So, yeah, anytime I've run across guys I covered, I've run across a few at sporting conventions. I've run across guys at charity events. And I'm always just so happy to catch up with them and see how they're doing and hear how their families are and just, you know, take a trip down memory lane for a few minutes.
Well, see, the reason I thought you were going to say Paulie, and now that I think about it, like, he wasn't fully formed Paulie by the time that you mm-hmm. left reporting. And at the end of his career, he was my favorite guy to go talk to because every word, like, he meant what he said. He would legitimately think about what question you asked him and then give you an answer. So, he wouldn't talk every day, but every couple of days, Paul Konerko would talk. And when you got him, it was 30 minutes. Like, it was him talking about hitting or pitching or the dynamics of the team or whatever it was. And I found him to be fascinating as someone to go and talk to inside the clubhouse.
You know what? I can see that. I can see that evolution. And I think you're right. I think I missed some of the more refined moments toward the end of it. But he was always so thoughtful to talk to. And you're right. He had a purpose. When he opened his mouth, whatever he was going to say was going to be, like, very well thought out and well articulated. So I would agree with you. I did like covering Paulie. I really didn't have many local baseball players I didn't like covering. The Cubs and the Sox were mostly pretty good to me. Some of the visitors, not always, but for the most part, the local guys were great. I'm going to turn the tables on you and ask you, because you're around the current Sox team, who your favorite guy is on this current team.
My favorite guy is Tim Anderson. I mean, I'm amazed by him. And I remember talking with him after he got drafted at Sox Fest. And I remember walking away going, man, this kid is cocky. Like, I'm like, he is very confident in his skills and he's laid back. And I got a chance to do some stuff with him with the White Sox through their youth baseball program. And it was amazing. Like, it was he was like the keynote speaker at this. And I went and I talked with him. And he kind of grabbed me and he said, listen, because we were doing like a Q&A in front of everybody. And he said, this is not really my thing. He's like, I need you to, you know, walk me through all of this. And I was like, the kid that I thought was cocky has really wanted to come off well in this moment. So we talked and we like hit it off. And the way that he represents not just the White Sox, but the Black community and the South Side of Chicago.
Is amazing.
Like, he is exactly what you draw up. Like, a fun, exciting player that believes in stuff and cares about things. And his home is here. Like, he's not one of the people that goes to California or Arizona or even back to Tuscaloosa. He lives here in the off season. And I think it's awesome. I find him to be such an interesting guy. And I think that he's coming to his own as a leader. And that's not, that wasn't an easy thing for him to do, because for a long time he was the young guy. And even, you know what, Jules, the part that made me really smile was this year, Billy Hamilton talking about Tim Anderson being a mentor for him, even though Billy is, I think, 6 or 7 years older than Tim. And he said that part of the reason that he's had success, or he had offensive success this season, was because Tim Anderson told him, you don't have to be what you've always been. Like, you don't have to just be a defensive replacement and a guy who comes in and pinch runs. If you want to get better, there are ways to get better. And that's the type of leadership that I know I respond to. And seeing him grow into that has been amazing.
I appreciate every single thing you said, because what I've observed from afar is exactly what you're saying and sharing right now. Just that leadership, that maturity. You know, when people talked about him being cocky with bat flips and stuff like that, I loved it. I'm like, yeah, tell me how you're going to change the game. Own this. You could own this city. You could make your stamp on baseball and make, you know, the national media sit up and take notice. And I thought that Field of Dreams game, that fitting ending for Tim Anderson was just goosebumps upon goosebumps. I actually have a picture. There was a reporter I had seen on Twitter who had some great shots from the game.
Darren Georgia?
And I reached out to her. What's that?
Oh, I thought it was Darren Georgia.
No. I wish I could think of her name, but she was an Iowa photographer. And she had a great shot of all the guys waiting at home plate. And I asked her, you know, is there any way I could pay for the shot? And she's like, oh, no, I'll just, you know, send it to your local Walgreens and you could just, you know, pay for the print or whatever. And so I went and I got it. And I'm absolutely in love with this home plate picture. But I was also supposed to get from her, and I never did, and I keep meaning to follow up with her so I can get it all framed together, was she had the shot of Tim Anderson rounding third base, where, like, it's just, it's all about to explode at home plate. And the joy on Tim Anderson's face, the hell yeah look on his face. I wanted to, like, you know, mat it all together and frame it and hang it in the sports basement. Like, that to me was just like the season in a nutshell of how much I love this team, and seeing them wait to celebrate together and seeing their leader be the guy who got that win in the cornfields. Like, that to me was just one of the best moments of the season.
I agree. I think that, and not just the White Sox season, I think that was one of the best moments of the major league season.
Yes. And we're biased a little, but, you know, I mean, that was magic. That was what other teams who were going to play in that game hoped to have.
Yes.
A walk-off hitting the home run in the cornfield. And tell me you did not totally get choked up when they all walked out of the corn.
The cornfield thing to me wasn't that big of it. I got more choked up when he was rounding third. Like, that moment that you're talking about, like, it just, it felt like everything kind of came together in that moment. And that game, if you remember, it was bananas. It was like they had control of the game and they lost control of the game, and then you know, Giancarlo Stanton's hitting balls to Nebraska and stuff, and you're like, oh man, they're gonna lose this game. And then there comes Timmy to put it all together for us. And it was such a, I remember how quickly, like, it went viral. And that was one of the things I thought was so cool about it for baseball, because baseball doesn't have those type of moments until we get to October. Like, it's not that. And last season, we had all the crazy, like, Shohei Ohtani stuff. And then this, like, here's the White Sox. Here's the Field of Dreams game. Here's Tim Anderson putting the world on notice. Here we come. I loved that.
I did, too. And like I said, I totally agree with your sentiment on him just representing, just, you know, living here and contributing here and mentoring here and just growing the community. I honestly am so proud to say he plays for my team, that this is a guy who gets it. And I think there's a lot of that. I love following athletes on Twitter, especially the ones who are actually on there. It's not like their PR guy putting something out. The guys who actually do tweet stuff. And he's a good follow. He'll tweet some really deep stuff that I enjoy following. And, you know, I love when his wife posts pictures of the family because I think his kids are just gorgeous. I really do enjoy, some of the Sox wives. If you ever follow Ashley Rodon during a game, Carlos is pitching, she's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, I've
she's
seen
calling
some.
Out the ump.
Yes. She's just like him. Like...
Yes, but she's such a trip. I mean, you know, she'll post the little K-zone, and she'll be like, yeah, that was really a ball or whatever. And like, she's just, you know, kind of snarky, but you can tell she's just standing up for her guy. But she knows baseball. You know, she's not some little fluff trophy wife kind of thing. I mean, she is a baseball woman. And like I said, I enjoy following those on Twitter. I kind of wonder what the score would have been like if I had Twitter and the text line and everything when I was there, because I really would have enjoyed the engagement. I would have liked being able to talk to the fans with the immediacy instead of just waiting for a fax to come across.
Oh my God. The Barrett score fax machine.
Lawrence, I was at the update desk the day Michael Jordan sent out the I'm back fax.
Were you really?
Yes, I was. Yes. I was sitting there at George Hoffman's update desk waiting for the fax to come across. And I mean, knowing that I'm such a pack rat, I probably still have it somewhere in my sports files. I probably still have the fax somewhere.
Jules, you got to find that.
Oh, if I could find that, I would, I don't even think I'd want to sell it. I'd frame it.
Yes.
I would, yeah, that would be a keeper. Because I really am a sports pack rat. And every time I have to pack to move, I'm like, why am I keeping this? Like, I have the media notes, the game notes from Kerry Wood's first start with the Cubs. Stuff like that. Or, you know, Mark Pryor's first start with the Cubs. Things like that where I think, like, I don't know if this means anything to anyone else, but it means something to me. You know, I like reliving it and, you know, going back and seeing what games I covered and, you know, what was historic about this. The thing I really have a hard time with, because I have no avenue to play them anymore, are the mini disc.
Yes.
Discs, the mini disc machines. I have so many of those labeled like Michael Jordan talking about such and such, or Big Ten tournament preview, or things like that. I don't know what to do with this stuff. I don't want to throw it away, but it's not like I can just pop it in my car and listen to it. So someday I will be able to go through all that. But I have cassettes that I labeled like DNTO, which was always Jules for do not tape over. And it would be something stupid or funny or you know, historic or whatever that I just thought, I'm going to need this someday. Lawrence, I have Jerry Manuel singing on a cassette somewhere that I just didn't want to tape over because it was funny. Because Jerry Manuel was singing during the pregame.
Was he singing Who Let the Dogs Out?
No, he was singing some like R&B song about it's a thin line between love and hate.
Yes, that's the name of the song.
But Jerry could not sing. And he's like doing this little screechy voice. And I was like, oh, don't sing anymore. Don't quit your day job. But it was so funny. I feel like I played it on the score at some point because it was just Jerry being Jerry. But I have so many like audio files that I don't know what to do with. I actually, and I know you'll appreciate this cause you're a local guy. Like, you know, like I grew up around here too. Do you remember Ricky Birdsong?
Yes.
The Northwestern basketball coach who, sadly was assassinated, was gunned down in Evanston. But Ricky was the basketball coach there my senior year. And I loved covering Ricky. Ricky going in the stands and all. Ricky was just crazy, but funny and sweet. Like, he's very misunderstood. But when Ricky had his little wander off into the stands, I was actually broadcasting that game. And I said to my color commentator, I think Ricky Birdsong's in section 108.
Wow.
And so Ricky had this little like leave of absence, school imposed leave of absence. And, you know, I had left something at the athletic department just saying like, hey, hope everything's all right, thinking of you, blah, blah, blah. And Ricky called my answering machine and said, Julie, it's Bird. I'm okay. I just want you to know I'm okay. But it's Bird. I could still hear that in my head. I saved that little answering machine cassette, that little micro cassette, for years. It was just so funny. And, you know, once he passed away, it, you know, it made it that much more special to me that I had like this special message he left on my answering machine. But it was just so funny. It was just him reaching out saying like, I'm not the nut job everyone says I am. I just, you know, need some time away. But it's Bird. Like, I can still hear it in my head, you know, 30 years later. It's just crazy.
That's awesome. How did you feel watching The Last Dance? Because you covered those guys.
Yes. Yes. And I actually wanted more. I actually wanted, like, more interviews and more footage and more. Like, if it had been 20 episodes, I would have been fine with it. You know, I have a hard time deciding, like, you know, when Michael's being Michael and when Michael's being Michael. Mm-hmm. You know, like when he's real versus like his persona that he's presenting to people. Yeah. You know, and I think when Michael's vulnerable, I think it's really cool to be let inside. And I think, again, assuming that's genuine in The Last Dance, you know, I appreciated that part of it. But, you know, there were parts of it where I, like I said, I wanted more. I wanted more interviews, more inside, little quirky stories and things like that. Like the stories with the security guards gambling in the locker room. I love stuff like that because you didn't see that everywhere. You know, you saw the Michael that you saw after practice or after the game or whatever, but you didn't see the Michael gambling with the security guards. So like, those were the things I really enjoyed about it. I knew the stories of the games and things like that, but I wanted more on what was going on behind the scenes. I always loved hearing the Utah stories because everyone's got so many takes on, you know, the food poisoning and did they poison Michael Jordan and, you know, was he supposed to eat this pizza or not? Like one of my favorite Michael Jordan moments is that game. That game where he's sick as a dog and he sags against Scottie Pippen and, you know, he's just left everything out on the court. But then when you hear people say like, well, you know, he really wasn't that sick, or, you know, when people try and say it's kind of phony,
yeah,
it ruins it for me. I don't want to hear that it was phony. I want to believe that, you know, yeah, Michael was sick as a dog and he dragged himself out there and he was a hero. But I loved The Last Dance. Like I said, I could watch 20 episodes instead of 10.
I'm trying to debate on whether I'm going to watch this Tom Brady thing.
Yes.
I'm stuck, right? I'm stuck because I'm like, this is clearly propaganda. But so was The Last Dance. Mm-hmm. And I'm stuck because The Last Dance was done so well. And I know that it's clearly caused some hurt feelings. Like, Scotty is clearly lashing out about some of the stuff that went down in The Last Dance. I'm very interested in Tom Brady's career, but I wanna at least feel like there is some pushback to just, I'm the greatest thing that's ever happened to the world. Like, I found myself going, when they were talking about the latest episode and it's about Giselle, I was like, there better be some Bridget Moynihan mentions in this episode.
Yes, like, he has a child with her. Let's not sweep this under the carpet.
Correct. And that's, all right, so you know what? Maybe I'll try it and I'll see if it's not too bad on the propaganda side. But I feel you. Like, as someone who grew up here, you know what, another thing I was thinking about? You were the first person that told me about Jarrett Payton. You were like, look, I know that he plays football, but have you seen this guy play soccer? And I was like, what?
Yep.
I always wonder if he would have just taken the soccer route, like what would have happened?
If that maybe he was kind of pressured into taking the football route because of his last name.
Yeah.
He might have been better playing soccer.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know, his dad was sick. His dad passes away. Like, I wonder if Jarrett's like an MLS legend now in the sliding door version of this is, you know, like, is he like a crazy good soccer star?
And, you know, to see what he's made of himself, like, you know, I feel proud of him. Not that I know him personally. You know, I crossed paths with him a couple times at like St. Viator events where I'd be speaking at career day and Jarrett and his buddies would be sitting in the front row and, you know, being teenage boys goofing around while I'm trying to talk or whatever. I remember Jarrett basically telling his buddies, like, knock it off, she's talking. But I crossed paths with him at Viator, you know, after I was long graduated and he was still there. And just thinking like, oh, this kid's something special. Like, he's got some polish to him. You know, you just think about when kids have to grow up with that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. When you grow up with your dad being so famous and even so publicly sick. And, you know, it's so much worse now when kids have to see social media about their dad or even the whole thing with Matt Nagy's kid in the basketball game. I don't care what you think of him as a coach, but as a dad, like, just let him enjoy his kid's game. Let his kid play basketball and not heckle him. And, you know, like, that made me sad. And I think of kids whose parents choose to be athletes, you know, they do have a different life. They do have a harder road in some aspects. I love the interview you did recently with Minnie Minoso's son, Charlie.
Yes.
I really enjoyed it. And,
thank you.
You know, one of the things he kind of alluded to, I think, with his siblings was just what they lost by having a dad who wasn't around as much, you know, that they still had a good relationship with him, but there was sacrifice. So, you know, I think Jarrett and Brittany, you know, they certainly had to give up some of their childhood being Walter Payton's kids. But like I said, I'm really proud to see what he's accomplished. And, you know, he's another good follow on Twitter. I always enjoy seeing things he's posting. And when he's asking you, like, you know, what you thought of the first half of the Bears game, I'm like, what did you think, Jared? I really want to know what you think. Did you think this running game sucked? Like, you know, that's the type of stuff I really want to hear.
When are the moments?
I'm just on Twitter.
When are the moments when you really miss having a microphone available?
Oh my gosh. All the time, because I never stop talking. I honestly, sometimes it's the fun stories. Sometimes it's like the really good, quirky, fun stuff I want to talk about. And sometimes it's the really deep stuff. It's the moments where, you know, you want to contribute to something that's larger, that's bigger in scope. And I think the last few years, just with all sorts of, you know, tension in our country and, you know, racial issues being even more forefront than they've been. You know, I think there's just been so many important moments where I wish I had a forum, where I wish I could talk about it. So I think, you know, it's complex. I think there are moments, it's the deeper stuff, I think, that I wish I had more of an avenue for. You know, some of the stuff with coaches or, you know, guys who are just knuckleheads off the field, and I just think, like, oh dude, you are, you know, a public persona and you have a responsibility to lead people and people look up to you and blah blah blah. Like, I kind of would like to flesh out some of those stories a little bit more, I think. But you know, I also love what I see so many people bring to the table and what I hear people bring to the table. And I can honestly tell you, like, if you ask any of my coworkers in the kitchen, they'll tell you I've got Odyssey on, you know, quite a bit, and I'm listening to, you know, you or your Score colleagues. I'm listening to things because I want to hear everybody's take on it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm wondering, like, oh, what are they going to say about this? What is, so, you know, it's something really like, you know, a social hot topic. I want to know, what is Dan Bernstein thinking about this right now? Like, I do tune in because I want to hear that. The Blackhawks story, that just gutted me. And I'm an empath. I feel such, I just feel strongly when people are hurting or suffering or wronged, you know, which is a painful way to live. I mean, you want to save every child who's abused, every animal who's abused, everyone who's sexually abused. You want to save all these people. And listening to those stories, I was just gutted by a hockey team that I thought I liked, that I thought, oh, you know, this organization turned it around from, you know, my days of covering dollar bill Wirtz and, you know, bad management, everything like that. They got it in the right direction. And then you hear you know, all this stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and you're just so appalled by it. And that's when I really felt like talk radio and podcasts and Twitter, things like that, really shine, because that's when people are able to dig a little deeper and get into some of the bigger issues and give people a forum. You know, when you have those type of bigger stories, you know, anybody can talk about, oh, this person ran a slant route and burned the DB for this many yards and blah, blah, blah. But when you have somebody who can dig into the heart of a bigger matter, like, that's where I'm really just so proud to hear so many of my friends in the broadcast industry do such a phenomenal job.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Now, I remember you bringing treats to the score. I remember you, here, try this. I remember you making sweets for Doug because Doug was diabetic. Like, I remember all of this stuff. Yep. Where did the baking thing come from? Like, when did you know that it was more than just a hobby?
So, I loved baking growing up. My mom could tell you stories about when I was in grade school and she would go up to, you know, see if my bedroom was clean, and I had sugar molds under my bed.
What?
Where I was like hinting sugar and pressing it, little Easter molds and stuff, and putting it under my bed, which is not a good idea. Why I couldn't just put it in the kitchen, I don't know. But my mom could tell you stories that I was, you know, experimenting with baking and sweets and treats way back then. I still remember, you know, wanting to make bonbons when I was like 8 years old. I wanted to make fillings for bonbons and things like that. So I always loved that side of it, but it was always a hobby. And as I got older and had put in my time at the score and was thinking about, you know, shifting directions, cooking school just kept coming back to me and saying like, hey, you could do this, give this a try. And I always have a lot of respect for people who switch tracks, who are willing to take the leap and say like, I'm comfortable with this, but I'm going to do something I'm not sure I'm going to be good at. I always respect the heck out of people when they say that, because I know how challenging it is. I know when I was going to cooking school and working in a kitchen, and I was, you know, going from like 5 a.m. to midnight, you know, it was exhausting. And I didn't know if I was going to be a professional pastry chef or not. I knew I could decorate a cake, but I didn't know where that was going to take me. And, you know, as I was at the score and making treats for everybody, I loved seeing how people love them. But there were also, you know, the detractors. I remember Steve Rosenblum once telling me no one was going to take me seriously in the press box if I kept acting like a Girl Scout mom. And I was like, ouch, that kind of hurt. Like, I just brought treats because people liked them, because I liked to bake, and I couldn't just bake for myself. So I baked for everyone else. You know, as a diabetic, I remember I brought cookies one day to the score and Dan Bernstein asking me, should you be eating that? I thought, well, I'm going to eat two just because you said that. you know, it really, you know, there were people that were like, oh, you can't do sports and be a baker. Like, you have to pick one. I thought, but why? Why can't I do both? Why can't I, you know, be good at covering baseball and still show up in the press box with cookies?
Seemed to work out for Tony Jannetty.
Right. And Tony is like one of my heroes. She was one of the nicest women to me when I started in the business. We swapped recipes together. She is an amazing baker. And I'm so sad she's retired now because I miss seeing her covering sports. But yeah, there were so many women that, you know, were nurturing and kind. And there were some women who were not. But Tony was just that motherly type that everyone gravitated towards. Whether it was at a DePaul game or a baseball game, everybody just wanted to be around her because she was just goodness and light. So Tony always encouraged my baking. She actually helped me develop the apple pie recipe that I use to this day. But she was one of the ones who could bring bread on a weekend baseball game or something, and people didn't mock her for it. So, you know, again, it goes back to the being more thick-skinned, that it still sticks with me 20 years later that people were telling me, you can't bring stuff to the press box. Well, yes, I can. Just watch me. I probably have told you this before, maybe when I sat in on your talk show once, that my goal is to do a sports cooking show. I have worked on this for a long time, and it just never got to the actual, like, getting on air stage. But I think that'd be awesome because that combines a lot of people's loves. A lot of people, you know, even guys at the Score who are grill masters or whatever, you know, they like their sports, but they also love being in the kitchen. And I think, you know, there's a niche for that. There's an outlet out there somewhere where that's going to work. And I hope I'm the person who can make it happen.
I mean, hell, now we literally have a studio kitchen now, Jules.
Yes. Yes. And, I think Mitch and I had actually talked about it at one point, and I, you know, it didn't really go anywhere, but I just thought how cool it would have been. Like, you know, don't tell Mitch I said this, but I would have done it for free just to see if it worked, just to see if, like, my concept, you know, was going to be as popular as I thought it was going to be, because who the heck wouldn't love to, you know, talk sports and cooking in the same show, because so many people love both. And, you know, one of the things I learned, I had shot a pilot for a cooking show years and years ago, and John Paxson actually did the pilot with me, and he was great. He was so good on camera. But one of the things I really loved is before we started cooking, we talked sports and food, and, you know, we talked about how teams have personal chefs at their training facilities now, and, you know, different dietary restraints and blah blah blah. And he told great stories about, you know, Michael Jordan's pregame steak habits and stuff like that. And this goes back to those little niche stories I loved so much. Everybody knew, you know, Michael Jordan got cut from the basketball team and blah, blah, blah in high school. Everybody knew those stories. But people didn't know the story about how, you know, they're waiting to leave for the arena and they're waiting on Michael's steak and, you know, stuff like that. I loved those stories.
Ah, that's so great.
It's hilarious. I mean, you know, Michael's pregame routine was having steak. And I, you know, I don't, to this day, I should have asked John Paxson why the bus was waiting for Michael, because Michael could just take a cab or whatever, or a limo. But they were waiting on the bus because the restaurant at the hotel was making Michael's steak. And I just thought, what a great story that is. Why don't stories like that get out? Well, because, you know, it takes a certain avenue or venue to be able to tell that story. It's not like you're going to tell that in the middle of, like, you know, so-and-so's sideline report during the NBA finals. That, you know, they're not going to squeeze that in. But I think that's the type of stuff I would want to watch. And, you know, I still to this day think it's going to work somewhere, somehow. And, you know, like I said, I hope I'm the one to make it happen. I am a little sad that it would have been great to capitalize on it when I still had so many sports connections, mm-hmm. people that would have, you know, jumped at the chance of doing the show. Because I, you know, I would have just talked them into it and plied them with treats, which is what I did for John Paxson and his family.
Great.
I sent them home with, like, goodie bags of stuff, and his wife emailed me to say how much their sons loved all the treats I sent home. And, you know, I just think, like, stuff like that is fun when you get to see athletes outside of their normal realm, when you get to see them cooking, when you get to see them playing in a band. Like, isn't it Bronson Arroyo, the one who's, like, a phenomenal guitarist, and I know Bernie Williams is too, but, like, when I would see baseball players who could, you know, jam with the band or play the guitar or whatever, like, I loved that because it was a different side of their personality, a different side of their humanity. So, yeah, like I said, if you put athletes in a kitchen, I will watch it. I will watch them cook, even if they're bad at it, even if they just want to, like, you know, make scrambled eggs. I will watch.
How competitive is the cooking baking world?
You know, what's funny is when I left the score, I was looking forward to getting a break from the good old boys club. And I jumped in the culinary world where the kitchen is a good old boys club, where many, many kitchens are predominantly male chefs. So I didn't really see that coming. But, you know, I don't think it's as cutthroat as, you know, things like Hell's Kitchen like to portray it. You know, good kitchens are ones where people are team players and they help each other out and they work together. You know, I can't think of many instances where I've been up for a job where it's been really cutthroat and people have been, you know, clawing at each other to get ahead. I really haven't seen as much of that in the culinary world. But I will say that I was trying to get my foot in the door with the gingerbread competition on the Food Network. And I thought I had everything they could have asked for. The casting director loved me, but I didn't make the cut. And I thought, well, what more do I have to do? And so then I'm watching the show going, I could have done that. I could have been better than that. Like, I'm critiquing the other bakers because I felt like, you know, they were in the spot I wanted to be in. And I felt like I brought more to the table. But instead of, you know, being bitter about it, I just use that as motivation and say, well, next year I'm going to come back even better. And they're going to have to put me on that damn show because what I can do is better than that. So, you know, I don't think it's like, you know, to your face, cutthroat culinary. And, you know, it might be in like Las Vegas and in some of the bigger circles, but, you know, in my mind, my biggest critic and my biggest competition is always me. Like, I'm always hardest on myself. So, you know, I use that to motivate me and I use it to make myself better every day. Like I said earlier, food is my heart on a plate. So, you know, if somebody doesn't like a dessert I made, you know, I take the constructive criticism, but, you know, on the side, I'm kind of sniffling a little bit like, why didn't they like it? and when you work in a retirement community where they don't have much of a filter, they're very honest with you if they don't like something. I mean, Lawrence, I made a flourless chocolate cake and somehow I don't think the woman understood it was supposed to be flourless. Like, she was saying it was more like the frosting at the bottom of the bowl or something. Like, basically it was gooey, but it's a flourless chocolate cake. It's supposed to be gooey. And she said, even a preschooler could have done better.
Wow.
Okay. You know, I was baking pretty young, but as a preschooler, I was not making flourless chocolate cake. So, you know, I do carry that stuff with me. But again, I use it to drive me. I don't sit there and cry because someone said a preschooler could do better on a cake. But, you know, I do take it to heart in a good way. I say, like, okay, am I doing everything I could do for people to love my desserts? Not everyone's going to love them. You know, when you're cooking dessert for 300 people, you're probably not going to have 100% approval rating. But do I want to have like a 99% approval rating? Yeah, I would take that. I'd still wonder what's wrong with that other 1%, but, you know.
What's something,
people that don't like chocolate, I'm sure.
What's something that you know you do well when it comes to baking? Like, it's something that you would say is your calling card.
So, in terms of baking, I think my apple pie is the best I've ever had. It's got the crumble top, which I love.
I love, you know, it too.
I don't like the rollout crust. I've got like the, you know, press in the pan crust and the crumble top, and the apples are chopped instead of sliced, so it's easier to eat. I love everything about it. It's salty and sweet and tart, all rolled into one. But in terms of like decorating and things with like visual appeal, you know, I love doing cakes. I love doing cookies. I love doing things where you go to drop off a cake and a little kid's like, oh my gosh, that's my birthday cake. Like, that reaction. I did a wedding cake earlier this year where the bride's theme was like glitz and shiny and lights. Like, that's pretty much what the mother of the bride told me. I'm like, all right, I could work with that. I made a light up wedding cake. I made a 4-tiered wedding cake that had fish bowls in between the tiers. And then I had lights in the fish bowls that were on remote control. So the whole cake lit up and twinkled. And it was the scariest wedding cake I've ever assembled because it was very tall and I didn't want it to fall in the middle of the ballroom floor. But I mean, when people saw that cake, they were just gasping because they're like, oh my gosh, it lights up, it twinkles. And you know, that's the reaction I wanted. I wanted people to go, I've never seen a wedding cake like that before. So, you know, I know like, you know, my style is not necessarily, oh, the type that's going to be on the cover of some food magazine, like, you know, some crazy fondant cake that took 600 hours to do, but it's going to be something where, you know, I have a tweak or a little, you know, a little side detail to it that somebody really appreciates. I know I had shared my gingerbread village with you. And
yes, I was amazed by that.
Thank you. It is 75 buildings. It's got two running trains. I start working on it before Halloween. It's crazy. And my favorite part is, Lawrence, there are so many puns buried in that gingerbread village. Like if you stand there and you read them all, it's awesome. Because, you know, I love bad puns. And is there really even a good pun? They're all bad. But this year, I had a whole bunch of new buildings. I had like seven new buildings. And I was adding a football stadium. So there you go. There's the sports and the baking together again. But I'm adding a football stadium. And I was so bummed out because I couldn't think of a name for the stadium. I wanted it to be something like cutesy, kitschy, Christmassy, but sportsy. And I couldn't think of anything. And I'm running through all the current stadia. And they all have corporate names.
Yes.
So you can't even like come up with anything good because you have to make a play on a corporate name. That's stupid. So I'm literally like just dragging my butt on getting the stadium done because I can't think of a name for it and it needs a name on the scoreboard and blah, blah, blah. And ironically, one of my delivery guys at work, I enlisted his help. I'm like, Kenny, I can't think of a name for the stadium. So he's like, all right, I'm going to work on it. I'm going to think about it. So he's texting me throughout the day, like, what about this? What about that? And he came up with Sladium. Like Santa's sleigh,
stadium. Yes.
And I had already done the field where the end zone said reindeer and snowmen. So I called it Reindeer Stadium. And it worked. And as soon as he suggested that, I'm like, Kenny, that's all I needed to unlock the creativity. Like now I know where I'm going with it. I had like a little gingerbread cookie of a reindeer over the entrance to the stadium. And I did like a sports font on the scoreboard. Like I totally knew where I was going to go with it. But when that came together, when he said Stadium, I'm like, that's it. That's what I've been waiting for. And then, of course, after I built it, you know, people start showering me with suggestions like, you should do Polar Bears Stadium and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, no, it's done. It's done. Don't suggest anymore.
No, you got the thing that you wanted.
I exactly. And I love just those little winks, those little touches, you know, where, you know, I do. I put a lot of time into it thinking about, you know, is somebody going to look at this and go, oh, this is really funny. Like, I get where she was going with this. Instead of just, you know, calling it Santa's Workshop or something. Like, they all have cute, quirky, funny names. And I did a little quiz this year for the members that live at the Garlands. So they could, you know, fill out, there's 10 questions. They could fill out their answers and put them in a box. And whoever got the most answers right got a prize. And one of the questions was, name one of the three snack carts in the village. I had popcorn, I had peanuts, and I had roasted chestnuts. So they just had to name one of the three. And I'm reading the answers the other night, and one woman wrote shrimp. And I'm like, shrimp? There's no shrimp in the village? Well, they had filled out the quiz on a night we'd had a party that had food stations. And one of the food stations was shrimp.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it made sense to her. Food station, cart, snack cart, shrimp.
Shrimp.
So I gave her a prize just for effort because I thought that was adorable. But, you know, I asked some easy questions and I asked some hard questions because I wanted people to like take time and look at it and appreciate the details. You know, I'm not just slapping frosting and M&Ms on a building. I'm putting detail into it. And, you know, the donut shop has little Fruit Loop donuts in the windows and stuff like that. I mean, there's so much detail to it. I think that's the part of my job that I just didn't even realize I would love as much as I do. Just that little attention to detail, that, you know, sauce on the plate or garnish or something, like that creative side of me. Like I didn't get to indulge in that a whole lot in sports. But now I, you know, I can go to town making, you know, cookies and things that are quirky and cute and funny and, you know, people smile. Like I said, that appreciation when people tell you like how much they love one of your desserts or, you know, when their kids are excited when you drop off the cake for their party. I mean, that's so gratifying to me. That makes everything I do worthwhile.
You were one of the first people that I had encountered that, I mean, I knew diabetics, but you know, those of us that were your producers, we had to kind of mm-hmm. know, because in case your blood sugar dropped on the air, like we always mm-hmm. had a can of pop or something around. How do you think that has affected your life overall?
You know, I really appreciate that you go back to that, and that you guys did have to be that extra line of safety and security. I don't think you were working the day I was doing updates with Jesse and Doug. It was Jesse Rogers and Doug Buffon were doing like the afternoon show that day. And I was doing updates, and the Bears had just announced who their Pro Bowlers were. And I was in a low sugar attack, and I was like in a loop. I could not get past the same sentence. I just kept saying over and over again, Brian Urlacher named to the Pro Bowl team, blah, blah, blah. And I was stuck. It was like you wanted to like hit the jukebox to keep moving or something. I couldn't get past the one sentence. And at one point, Jesse turns around and said, you said that already. And I shouted, I know. But I couldn't get out of this low sugar attack on the air. And so I just wrapped it up. I did the weather and the Dow, and I wrapped up. And in the meantime, Doug Buffon, knowing what was going on, told the producers, go get her a Coke, go get her a Snickers bar. And, you know, sure enough, I got my sugars back up and I felt better. And they brought me back on the air to tell the listeners what had happened, because they were all calling because they thought I was drunk. Like the producers were fielding calls that, you know, what's wrong with Julie? Is she drunk? Nope, she's just a diabetic who, you know, let her sugars get too low. But it did affect a lot of covering sports. I really appreciated Ron Santo kind of guiding me through some of my early years with diabetes, because he had dealt with it on such a grand scale for so long. You know, I still remember '98, Ron Santo telling me they were within 5 years of a cure. And here we are in 2021 with no cure. But Ron had seen me on the field at a Cubs Braves game in Atlanta, and he knew I was out of it. He just looked at me and knew I was in bad shape. And Ron Santo was unwrapping Tootsie Rolls and feeding them to me. Like, here, eat these, until my sugars came back up. And I just thought, like, boy, there were so many good people that looked out for me and that caught it when I was, you know, not myself, when I might have not even realized how low I was. I know there were Bulls games I was at where, like, I was looking for oranges or sweets or something to just get my sugars up. Mm-hmm. You know, you're supposed to be covering a Bulls playoff game, and you're thinking, like, where's the nearest vending machine in the United Center? Because I needed something. So, you know, there was a huge challenge to that, to always making sure you were eating right and to making sure you didn't get caught without candy or something sweet if you were in the locker room or in an interview situation. You know, there were a lot of very challenging moments. There was a weekend where I had to do a Sunday morning show, and I kind of slept through my alarm. And it was Hub was doing Pro Football Weekly that Sunday morning, and I'm laying in bed listening, and I could feel like, oh, I need to be getting up. Why am I not getting up? And I just remember hearing like Pro Football Weekly as I'm laying there thinking, I need to get to the station. But my sugars were so low, I could not crawl out of bed. And so I eventually, you know, grabbed some Skittles or something from the nightstand. I got myself going, hauled my butt to the station, and literally got there. I think I was late. I think Steve Olkin had covered for me for the first half hour or so. Because my sugars were so out of whack, and I was not the type to oversleep. I was never late for a show. And that morning the diabetes just, you know, knocked me on my butt. And thank God I did get up, because most diabetics fear what they call dead in bed syndrome, that you are going to go to bed and your sugars will drop and you won't wake up. So, you know, I consider myself really blessed that I've avoided some big scares. But people always, you know, think it's hilarious when they say you're a pastry chef and you're diabetic. And it's like, well, you know, it's not like I sit there and eat ice cream all day long. You know, I watch my sugars. I take my insulin when I need to. And, you know, I don't deprive myself of things. I just try and make smart food choices. But yeah, even in the kitchen, there are days I'm running around trying to get ready for a party or something, and my sous chef will look at me and say, have you eaten today? And I'll, you know, kind of sheepishly hang my head and say, well, no, not really. I had a truffle. He's like, would you go eat something? So I, you know, 20 some years later, I've had this disease for 26 years now, and I'm still stubborn and hard-headed and just kind of a dunce sometimes when it comes to putting myself first and making sure I'm not going to pass out on the floor.
You brought up his name. I need a Doug Buffon story.
I love Doug. I miss him so much.
Me
and
too.
I felt so blessed to get to do Sundays. I would be there with Grody doing the Around the NFL show, and Doug and OB would be getting ready for the post game. And God, there were so many just like good Doug moments. But one of my favorites was when Doug would say to me, you know, I need you to make some of that Polish food for me. You know, those galopkis. And I'm like, what the heck is a galopki? Well, in Polish, the food is pronounced gołąbki, but it is spelled galopki. So it's basically like the cabbage stuffed with, you know, the ground beef and rice. But Doug was jonesing for some galopkis. And so there was one Sunday where I brought in gołąbki for Doug and OB for the post game show. And Doug was like a little kid, like with a pie or something. Like he's sitting there just shoveling it. He was so happy to have his gołąbki in the studio. And it just, like, that's one of my favorite memories of all time of Doug, was just like Doug wanting this Polish food and, you know, Swajka, you got to make me some. You got to make me some Swajka. And so I brought it in, and he and Doug, you know, went to town in between yelling about how bad the Bears were.
He's just the best, you know? Like, it's hard, yeah, it's hard to describe to people where he didn't have to be nice to any of us. Like, this is the guy who played next to Dick Butkus, but he very much like took time to get to know you, to make it fun, to not be the intimidating like Bear linebacker. He wanted all of us to kind of share in the silliness and the joy of it. I miss him every day.
And you know, you were one of the people he'd be calling little buddy.
Yep.
Like, you were one of the little buddies. That affection he had for everybody. I look back, I'm a picture taker when it comes to like get-togethers and holiday parties and stuff like that. I have so many pictures from my 10 years at the Score that I would just love to like put in some sort of collection or something and just share with you guys, because there's so many good ones. And some of them have Doug in them. Some of them have Norm in them, you know, like guys that, you know, I smile when I see it. I'm like, oh gosh, I loved those guys. And then, you know, so many people that are still with us that I smile when I see them in the pictures, like Terry. You know, I have pictures from, gosh, so many Score Christmas parties. I have pictures of you and Dan Zampillo together that are hilarious. And just a side note, I always loved the Me and Z show. Always.
Thank you.
And I loved that show. And Zampillo hated the song Two Princes by the Spin Doctors.
Yes, he did.
He hated that song. And Lawrence, I could be like in a grocery store or something, and that song comes on, and I hear Zampillo in my head making fun of it. I hear him singing it in his like mocking voice. But I mean, this is, again, like 20 years later, and I can still hear the Me and Z show making fun of the Spin Doctors, Two Princes. You know, I have like so many good memories of just hanging out with you guys, you know, being at Sluggers or, you know, like I said, a Score Christmas party, or, you know, somebody's, you know, it wasn't a bachelor party. I don't remember whose party it was, but it was, you know, one of the guys from our age range. And we were all at Dave and Buster's for something.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Like, you were there, Jay Hood, Spiegel. Like, everybody's Jerry Riles, everybody's in the pictures, and I'm like, what were we there for? But I felt like it was somebody's, like, bachelor party kind of thing. And, you know, I look back at those pictures, and I just think, like, those were the days I really loved what the Score was. That it was just a bunch of us, like, being goofy and pioneering. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time as a reporter more than anything, because, you know, I got to be around people. I wasn't just, you know, holed up in the studio and all that. But there were just so many good people that I look back and smile, or people I still can connect with on Facebook. I miss so many of my reporter buddies. Like when I hear Zach Zaidman, I always wonder how Zach's doing, because I don't think Zach's much of a social media person where I can track him down. But like Grody and I will message each other on weekends. You know, he's doing his Wake and Bake show. And he'll say something that'll make me laugh, and I'll send him a message, and he'll message me back. And, you know, it's like old times. It's, you know, even now when I get to connect with you, I'm like, oh, Lawrence. Like, as soon as you asked me if I would come on, like, just, you know, happy feelings. Just, I would do anything for Lawrence. And I was hoping we were going to be talking Northwestern DePaul basketball today.
Yeah.
But the guys had COVID. There was no game on Saturday.
Yeah, it was really disappointing and very scary.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to make light of it. It is serious. But when I saw it was on the schedule, I'm like, Northwestern DePaul and both teams are good? This could be interesting.
Right. And that the new gym, I don't know if you've been to a game there, but I really love what they've done to it.
I would love to see it. I've heard such good things.
The word I use to describe it is cozy.
Nice.
It's got
like
a
an alumni kind of way?
Yes. Like, it's got like a – I went to go see Northwestern play DePaul there a couple years ago, which was maddening because I want to say DePaul had a 20-point lead at half and – ended up losing the game by 20 points or something like that.
Yes.
And like,
wasn't it like on a last second shot or something?
Yeah. I mean, they
went
got
down to the wire.
They got their doors blown off in the second half. And then, it was really upsetting. I was very angry. There are pictures of me being very angry in the crowd as all of this stuff is going on. But the seats that I had were amazing. And I felt like there wasn't a bad seat there now. Like, it felt very warm. Like, I love Loyola's gym, too. I think that it's got a real warm quality, too. It's probably about half the capacity of Welsh Ryan Arena. But I love it. So, when you feel comfortable, you got to go to a game.
If you will take me, I will go. If
all
you
right.
show me the ropes, I would love to see it.
I mean,
I always liked covering your Demons. You know that. I mean, there were some goofs there. I covered some of the crazies. I covered the Pat Kennedy years.
Oh, yeah.
oh, my gosh. That team, when you'd have guys like, you know, you'd be there waiting for practice to start. And we're like, when's practice going to start? Oh, well, you know, when the big three show up, it's like, what? Wasn't practice supposed to start 20 minutes ago? Yeah,
well, Lance isn't ready and neither is Quentin. So there's no practice today.
And Bobby, Lance, and
Q. Yep.
Yeah, the three of them were just like rock stars there. But I mean, there were some fun teams to cover. I liked covering college basketball a lot because every year there'd be some different team in the area that was good. You know, it might be DePaul, it might be Illinois, it wasn't usually Northwestern, but, you know, it might be Loyola or UIC. But there was always somebody good to cover and somebody fun to watch. Even that Northwestern NIT team that played Tommy Kleinschmidt in DePaul.
Yep.
Like, I was at school then, and I loved that game. That was crazy.
Like, and now, like, Tommy's, like, one of the best high school coaches in the city.
Yes. Yes.
Like, all of it's pretty crazy to me.
Yeah. And, I mean, wasn't he always, like, Mr. Spitfire, like, you know.
Yes.
Fire and the Passion.
Yeah, fire and the passion guy, loved when we were undergrads together, a guy that loved to have a good time. And and now I'm like, look at you with your little suit on out here molding the minds of young people.
You know, I wish for the life of me I could remember where he's coaching, and I'm really embarrassed that I can't. Pat Baldwin, who was the point guard at Northwestern when I was there, is now a coach in Division I, and I'm totally drawing a blank on where he's at. But Pat was such a good guy, and I remember him, you know, kind of coming through the ranks, being on the bench and everything, and now being a head coach. I want to say he coaches a Panthers team, and I'm just drawing a blank. But, you know, when you see guys like that, like you're talking about being an undergrad with Tommy, I was an undergrad with Pat, and just a great guy, just a skills player, you know, ball handler, good shooter. Like, when I see him now tweeting about his college team doing well or whatever, I'm so proud of him.
Milwaukee.
I still can't believe, yes. Yes, you got it. That's it.
You pulled Panthers? Like, that's pretty good.
I was drawing him. See, this is where I start to feel like we're getting old. Like, my brain is not as sharp as it used to be. Honestly, like I can barely remember what I had for lunch yesterday, and then I hear you guys on the air talking. You're like, remember that game 23 years ago where blah 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 blah? Like, Spiegel pulled one of those today, and I'm like, how the hell did I remember that? Like, I remember bits and pieces, but I am just terrible at the little details. I really am, and I You know, sometimes I think the diabetes had something to do with it. Like all those low blood sugar attacks, I think they do burn your brain cells a little bit. I'd love to see someone do a study on that. But in all reality, like I can remember a ballet routine I learned when I was 5 years old, but I can't remember, you know, why I walked into a room 5 minutes ago. So yeah, I feel very challenged by the age we're facing right now. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I feel young at heart.
It's a lot to
we've been on the earth a long time,
right? You know? and there's so much stuff that you like remember, but and then like something will just spark it, you know, like you'll have like a you're like, oh yeah, and then that leads you down a memory trail of all sorts of goodness and everything. But I'm so happy that you were available for this. Like, this was so fun.
This was awesome. I was happy to catch up with you and to laugh and share stories. And like I said, I am game anytime you want to talk. I'm always available for you. And this just made my day. A lot of, like you said, something sparks a memory. You sparked a lot of good memories for me today.
All right. Well, I got a couple of ideas that I'm going to try to work through, because I feel like there's definitely a market for you to do something. So I gotta start thinking about connecting you to some people, because I think that's probably like the next thing that I do, like career-wise, where I love being talent, but I'm also in a spot where I love putting people together. Like the word would probably be producing. Like I love producing good content.
Yes. And again, you know, it goes back to that that interview with Minnie Minoso's son, where you were talking about a friend of yours who was putting you in touch with people at a Sox event. And you were saying how good she was at doing it.
Yeah, Shakia.
I can't think of what her name is. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And you were just saying she's good at connecting people. And some people have such a gift at that. And I love seeing those people in action where they just say like, hey, you have this in common with this person. You two should talk. And I just love that forged connection.
Well, I got some ideas that are swirling around my head, so I will be in touch. If I can nail down what the ideas are, I will let you know, and maybe we could figure something out to do together, because I think that there's definitely something there, and now I got to figure out what is. All right?
So now if we do a project together, I'm going to bring treats. I'm going to bring the Girl Scout mom treats. So, you know, I won't let anybody tell me I can't.
All right. No one is going to tell you that you can't. I am here for you bringing the treats. Jules, thanks for doing this. I will definitely be in touch.
You have my email, my phone number, my Facebook, my Twitter. You got whatever you need. You holler anytime. I'm yours.
All right. You got it. Have a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Merry Christmas to you and everybody.
Merry Christmas to you too, Jules.
Thanks, Lawrence.
So yeah, man, I got some ideas. I started writing down a list of people that I want to try and connect Julie to, and I actually think that her idea is brilliant. The idea of marrying sports to food, because we do it all the time. Now it's just trying to figure out what type of person, what type of vehicle that can be built. Let me ask you this. If I gave Julie a food podcast, would you listen to it? If we threw it into House of L, would you want it? If we did like a playoff or Super Bowl podcast on getting the right things, would you be interested in something like that? As I said, my mind is spinning in a bunch of different directions on that. I loved hearing her talk about, you hear how passionate she is about what she does now, like being a pastry chef. And I want to say Julie played volleyball maybe in high school. I should have asked, but you can, like, the competitive aspect of her personality, you can hear it in talking about wanting everyone to love the things that you make, and looking at stuff you see on TV and being like, I can do that. Like all of that stuff. I love that. I love that she's like, yeah, I could totally do that stuff if someone would let me do that stuff. You hear how fired up she gets still about the White Sox, like the things that she truly, truly cares about. And that, I can't wait to see that picture that she got of Tim Anderson. I might want that picture too. That seems like a perfect thing to hang up on a wall. Some of the really important stuff from talking with Julie that I think young reporters, talk show hosts should go back and re-examine if you're listening to this, is her talking about the different people that she talked to in dugouts and in locker rooms. That it's not just, let me get the quote from the star of the team. It's her talking about pitch grips with relievers in dugouts, learning some of that stuff. Stuff that it might not be something that you report. Like, and she's discussing, she's saying, yeah, this wasn't stuff that I was going to put in an update or I was going to do in a rap, but it gives you a higher base of general knowledge about the game. It gives you insight into the people that you're covering and what it is that they think is important. That's the type of stuff that it takes reporters a little while to understand. Like, when you first get a gig, your head's swimming because you don't want to miss the big picture. But here's the thing, you're almost never going to miss the big picture. Like, we were recording this after the Bears lose their game on Monday Night Football. You know what the big story is. What are those small stories? What are the things that Access will give you insight into? And the stuff that Julie's talking about is exactly the way that you go about it. You build relationships by just being quiet. I get a lot of love for, in some cases, being a bit of an attack dog in press conferences. And honestly, like, the only time that I really did that is if I felt like someone was lying to me. But it's as valuable. What you don't see or what you didn't see is not me and Lovie Smith in a press conference. It's me talking to players without a microphone in the locker room. There were whole days where I wouldn't record stuff in the locker room. It was great to have a partner like Zach in there because we could do all sorts of stuff. Like, if I was working on something bigger or he was working on something bigger, then the other one would cover. But there are plenty of conversations I had with Devin Hester or Mike Brown or Lance Briggs when they were players that had nothing to do with next week's game. And that's what Julie's talking about, and that's why she was good at her job. She's talking about gaining knowledge inside of the game, learning how those people think about the game, how they interact with each other, how they interact with you, what people are thinking while they're doing their jobs. What's Kevin Tappany thinking when he's on the mound? So I think there's some really valuable advice in there. And I also think that what she had to say about being a diabetic was really raw and honest, and I appreciated her talking about that. And I wasn't producing that show where she had that moment, but we knew, like, the producers knew, and a lot of them knew, like, from then on, make sure you got something just so in case her blood sugar drops that she'll be okay. And I'm glad that there is some irony to her being a pastry chef. There's some irony to it, but it's fantastic. So I'm glad that she was available, and I hope that you enjoyed the episode, because I really enjoy talking with Jules and really like catching up and having some fun and talking about some important stuff. So I thank you for listening. There's going to be a new, I think there's, I let the sports adjacent guys do whatever they want for the most part. I have a couple of hard rules, but other than that, they can do whatever they want. So there'll be a new episode out in the next couple of days. Hopefully you will enjoy that. As Julie said, Merry Christmas to all those who are celebrating. Happy Kwanzaa as well. Happy Hanukkah. Enjoy yourself out here. Be careful. Wear your mask. Masking works. If we've learned nothing else, we've learned that masking works. So please wear your mask because I want you here. I want you listening. I want you to be okay. I want you to be able to enjoy yourself and your holiday for sure. And that's it. Y'all have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I will talk to you next time. I got some more people, man. I got some interviews that are already in the can that you're going to love. I promise you that. I'll talk to you next time. Peace.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.